Welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Jeff Fiegels. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets as the Giants fell to the Rams yesterday, 51-17 at MetLife Stadium. They fall to 1-7 on the season, 0-4 at home. It was the most points that the Giants have allowed going back to week 8, 2015, when they surrendered 52 points to the Saints in New Orleans in a 52-49 offensive clinic loss in which Drew Brees and Eli Manning combined for 13 touchdowns. But we are actually recapping what happened yesterday, what transpired. And Jeff, when you break down this game, you could point to defense, you could point to offense, you could point to special teams. All three facets contributed to this loss. Missed field goal, block punt on special teams. Offense turned the ball over three times. The Rams scored 17 points off of those turnovers. And on defense, I think the biggest mind-boggling aspect is the explosive and the big plays that the Rams collected all throughout the contest.
And one of them being a third and 33
play. Yes.
That to me pretty much sums up what happened yesterday with the defense. When you give up, I don't know how many years it's been since you've seen a third and 33 converted.
It's rare.
It's rare. And, you know, there's just so much that you can talk about in that game. We talked about it, you know, yesterday enough, but it's just, I just, it's hard to understand, you know. And the thing that happens with this Rams team is that, you know, they're a very complementary football. They play all three phases very, very good.
A lot of strengths.
And if you see what happened last night, you could see that's proof of it. They played great special teams. Okay, their offense was spectacular, and their defense was causing three turnovers. Anytime that you turn the ball over, period, no matter what game it is, and you're minus three on the day, you're not going to win the game, typically. That's just the way it goes. But when you're a football team that's in disarray like the Giants are right now, you can't afford to have those types of mistakes. Penalties was another thing that when you mentioned, there were some penalties in the game that where you look at them in certain situations and you can't have those types of offsides and personal fouls and things like that. I mean, Landon Collins has got to know better on certain things. But collectively, I thought that this team would have played better. What did I think that they were going to win? No, but I thought they would come out of the bye, at least for preparing for a team for 2 weeks and being able to come back. And as Coach McAdoo said, you want to flush the first part of the season. There was no flushing there. They continued to be in the downward spiral that goes into
picked
the
up where they left off, essentially.
And I think that, you know, it's very difficult from a fan's perspective. I know that everybody is reeling right now, like, what is going on with this team? And there's just too many things to talk about. And because we're not in the locker room and we're not in the meetings, it's hard for us to really discuss about, you know, what's going on as far as preparation. We can only speculate and look at it, what we see on the field and how it carries over and what we can talk about that. It doesn't seem like there is that type of preparation going on. And it was a tough thing to watch. I was watching that game just like you and everybody else, sitting there going, you know, the Giants at one point in time in the first quarter were playing pretty good football. They started to run the ball.
It was a 7-7 game, yeah.
And they had a chance. And really, I think what happened was they had to abandon the run because they started to get down in the game. And then certainly then all of a sudden you fall exactly into the trap that the Rams wanted you. They said, okay, we're going to challenge you to throw the football because we're going to stop the run. Or we're going to challenge you to throw the football. You are running against us, but we've also put up 30 points on you.
So good luck continuing to run the football and making up that deficit.
There you go. Yep, and that's exactly what you saw yesterday. You know, from a Rams offensive standpoint, they design plays. They love the screen game. They love the outside run, and because they have athletes that can do it. And I'll tell you, Jared Goff, he had a heck of a game yesterday. It's really the second time he's thrown for over 300 yards in the season, going back to the first game against the Colts. So he's really has been asked to just manage the football game. Yesterday, he just was out there flinging all over the place because he could. You know, nobody was covering anybody.
And I was going to add, when his passes were off the mark, in my opinion, Jeff, I didn't think it was a reflection of the Giants' defense. I think it was him just overthrowing it or getting rid of it too quickly. I mean, there was an opportunity where he had one of his players, I forget who it was, middle of the field, wide open, he overthrows him.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as if the Giants' pressure was flustering him to move out of the pocket. He was comfortable pretty much the entire game.
And then when you look at completions and missed opportunities, we got to talk about Eli. And, you know, he had a couple, you know, Sterling Shepard. That was definitely a 75-yard touchdown if he could hit him in stride there. And then the other one to
Tavares King
in the back of the end zone. You know, it's a different – it's actually the score isn't indicative to how close it could have been in those situations. The game could have been a lot closer if you convert those types of plays. And certainly Eli has a problem of holding on to the football, especially giving the Rams the ball inside their own 20-yard line and being able to score three plays later. It's just a lot of things happening, and it's really – you're running out of time to fix these things. No.
Yeah, it was the third time in the last four games, Jeff, where he had a strip sack, where he was hit and then wound up coughing up the football and giving the opposing team favorable field position, because you look at what the Chargers did, you look at what the Seahawks did, and you know, I bring up the turnovers here on our game log. So the fumble early in the game, the Rams take over at their own 48. That's great field position, Jeff. Then the second fumble that Wayne Goldman coughed up the football, the Rams take over at midfield. They score a touchdown again, like they did on the first one. Okay, let's go to the next turnover, the Eli Manning interception. Rams take over at the Giants 30. They
that was
wind
a really
up,
bad throw, too.
Correct.
Really
and they wind up converting, settling for a 46-yard field goal. But that's points on all of the turnovers. And then, to me, the block punt is essentially a turnover,
sure
too.
Is.
Right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
you're giving them the field at the Giants' 18-yard line, and they wind up punching it in because, I mean, 18 yards to them is nothing.
And a block punt is a couple things. It is a turnover when you think about it. It doesn't go on the turnover statistic, but it is a turnover.
It changes
you give
field
the ball
position.
The 18
Absolutely.
Also, it's a big play. It's a momentum play in football. Block punt is, you know, it gets things going for the other team. And really, you know, I had mentioned to you earlier yesterday about the special teams for the Rams. I mean, they are dynamic. They can return kicks. They can cover kicks. They can cause turnovers. They block kicks. So that was something you kind of had in your mind that was something was going to happen yesterday, because that team is very prolific on their special teams, whether it's a big return. But, of course, they come through and block the punt. You know, and a block punt typically is a failed responsibility to line of scrimmage. Somebody didn't pick up somebody. It's 99% of the time it's not the punter. It's the protection up front. Something breaks down because the punters are getting the ball off in less than 2 seconds. That's the normal routine that they go through. It's never their fault for a block punt unless the guy literally drops the ball and then it takes more time to get it off. It's a protection problem. So once again, is there the preparation? Is you know, how do you not listen in a punt team? You usually have 6 or 8 guys in the box, and it's all man. It's all block this guy, and you count from
outside.
You
all have your individual assignment.
I got, you know, and you just, when you're sitting there and you're lining up, if you got a guy over you and there's 3 guys, you know who your guy is. And even when they twist and you practice that, you can practice that in practice. You say, oh, you can't practice tackling. You can practice punt rushes and twists and all that kind of stuff. It's just going through the motions is what they're doing.
And all of those breakdowns contributed to a lopsided game. And we were talking about this throughout the course of the season, Jeff. When you looked at the Giants' record, it was 1-6 entering Sunday. You could say that clearly it's disappointing, playing below expectations. Nobody would disagree. But they were in these games, Jeff. That's the one thing that jumped out to me. It was competitive football entering the fourth quarter. I don't think that's a stretch to say. The results were not pretty, but it was competitive football. This is the first game that now you could point to. It was not competitive football in the second half.
No,
for the most part.
No, the first half, you kind of sitting there going, okay, you know, this isn't – they got a chance. But then I think the second half, there's no competitiveness. And you mentioned those other – really 3 games at the beginning of the season, they lost 3 games in less than 10 points. So, I mean, those – you were in the game. And unlike last year where the defense could produce and stop teams from scoring and winning those games, this year it was the complete opposite. Defense couldn't stop anybody. The offense gave the defense the lead, and they gave it up. And they continue to do that.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat. Let's open up the phone lines as we continue to break down the Giants 51-17 loss to the Rams at MetLife Stadium. Stuart is in Harrisburg. He gets us started. Stuart, what's happening?
Well, good morning. It's Blue Monday for sure.
Big Blue Monday.
Yeah, it's a real Blue Monday. But Jeff, a word before I say anything else. I want to thank you for all those years of those fabulous punts.
You're welcome.
It's great to watch an aesthetic kicker.
Well, I appreciate that, and I enjoyed every minute, every down, every kick that I was in a Giants uniform. I can tell you that for sure.
Well, you brought us all a lot of pleasure. Now to business.
Okay.
And It's simply this morning. I think we can all agree that from week three, we were in crisis mode, and the team is really shot to hell. And I think at this point, it's fair to say that it's time to hear from some new voices on the management side in particular. So therefore, what I'm saying is I think it's time to fire the general manager and the coach, regrettably, because you can't fire one and not fire the other. So that's my starting point, and I'd follow up with only one thing, and that's I think we need to see a bit of Davis Webb to see what we have and what we don't have for the future at the quarterback position.
I think it's possible. We'll start with the second point. I think it's possible, Jeff, that as the season progresses and maybe games are lopsided, that they pick their points to maybe put in Davis Webb in the third quarter, or most likely the fourth quarter, and see perhaps if he could get some game reps and situations play out that way. But I think it's a bit of a stretch, even if this season continues to head in this direction where they're not winning a lot of games, that he is going to replace Eli Manning as the starting quarterback. That I don't see happening.
I don't either. I think what I anticipate happening is that if you want Davis Webb to get some reps in these games, you're going to have to not have him inactive. You're going to have to put him to the number two quarterback and then deactivate independent. And really what's happened yesterday with all the injuries that the Giants had, they couldn't afford to keep a third quarterback on the roster because just of all the other spots they had to fill. But going forward, if you start to get some of these players back, you may have that luxury of keeping Davis Webb active, and maybe they keep all three of them active. I don't know. But I would say if I had to, that you probably are going to see Davis Webb be the number two quarterback because of the fact that if you do get in some games like this or games that are out of hand, that you want to see a little bit of – because, again, this is Eli Manning we're talking about here. We're talking about a guy that is – you know, that he is the franchise. He's been around here for so long. But, you know, players, they at certain times in their career – This happens, and you know, from an organizational standpoint, you have to make a decision, and sometimes it's a tough decision. But you have to look at the future, and we all know that Eli Manning is really not in the future of this organization because he's at the end of the road here. What is the future? The future Davis Webb is the future now that the Giants are going with the way they are, Lance. And what kind of a draft pick are they going to get? Something we didn't think we'd be talking about at all this season until the very, very end. But I think that you have to collectively get together as an organization and understand what direction you want to go in. And more importantly, if you go in that direction, you have to stay in that direction. You can't teeter back and forth with it.
Well, I mean, you could certainly put him in a few games in the fourth quarter, and that could be consistent.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think there's any issue with that.
That's the only thing I'm talking about. I mean, if you're in a game and you're competing, and listen, I believe that Eli Manning gives you your best chance to win.
Yep.
So he's one of the better players on this football team. So you're going to go into him being your starting quarterback throughout the rest of the season. It's just if something happens like yesterday – there's no reason to have Eli Manning back in there. And I know that yesterday that Coach McAdoo had said that he was going to put Geno Smith in the game with 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter. But the Rams went on a 6-minute drive, and they weren't able to get him in for that whole time.
I was going to say, it's also, even though a lot of people are speculating that, you know, they should give the younger quarterback an opportunity, number one, whether you put a quarterback in the first quarter, the third quarter, the fourth quarter, it's still valuable experience.
Sure.
So I don't really think that makes a big difference, but it's also unheard of. I can't remember an example, Jeff, maybe you can, where a team that had a veteran, established quarterback, whether he be in the middle of his career, at the tail end of his career, and the team is not doing well, and they just decided, you know, we're going to bench him because we want to give the young guy an opportunity. Case in point, the Chargers have had some troubling seasons. They haven't turned to Philip Rivers and said, Philip, you know, we know you're getting towards the tail end of your career. We're going to bring in the younger guy for the last three games of the season just to see what he could do. Now, I know the Steelers may have not been in that position, but Roethlisberger is also in line with Manning and Rivers in terms of age and how many years he's been in. And they didn't say Landry Jones is now going to get reps. Landry Jones started when Big Ben wasn't healthy.
Right.
That's when he got the opportunities, and that's how most teams operate.
Yeah.
You take out the starter when he's not healthy and he's not ready to go. So if anything plays out, I think it would be – with a lopsided game, like yesterday, where Ben McAdoo said he wanted to get Geno Smith in with about 9 minutes remaining. Unfortunately, the Rams put together a lengthy drive, and that prevented him from taking out Eli Manning earlier in the contest. Those are the situations I see playing out the remainder of the season in which maybe Webb would get some shots.
And when you use the analogy with Ben Roethlisberger, he's a guy that gets hurt. You know, Eli doesn't get hurt. So that situation is not going to happen unless, you know, he's out of there because he gets injured. The other one is, I will give you, I was on the team when you think about, but this is a little bit of a different situation, being that Eli was the number one pick in the draft, if you will, or number two, I should say.
With Kurt Warner.
Yeah, and with the Kurt Warner thing. You know, I think, and we, by the way, we had a winning record at that point in time. So, I mean, that was basically when Tom Coughlin said, this is it. This is the change, and now it's going to go forward. But, you know, Davis Webb isn't Eli Manning is coming out of college.
In terms of the expectations, the pedigree.
I think that's probably not a way to compare it to, but really when you look back at it, it did happen in that way. But that was an extraordinary circumstance that would be what it is, because ultimately Eli goes on to be the guy he is. They made the right decision. So I think there'll be a lot of debate. There'll be a lot of conversation about this, you know, about Eli Manning, the future of Eli Manning, what the future is going to be like at that quarterback position. Granted, you know, 10 years ago, we thought we'd never get to this point, but it's here. And now it's time to talk about it. Eli's your guy that gives you the best chance to win. He will be the starter going out throughout the rest of the season, in my opinion. There's no reason to make a change there. Absolutely not.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Adam is in Columbus. Adam, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing this morning?
What do you got for us?
Well, I want to make kind of a general observation in the season and the way I see things and maybe what's gone wrong, and then a quick specific question about the receivers. But, you know, I look back to week one, and I think – our season's kind of like one of those whack-a-mole games where the mole being the problem, it pops up, you fix it, you whack it, and then all of a sudden across the board another one pops up, you whack it, something different. You know, in the first couple weeks it was the line. We didn't have a chance to throw the ball, couldn't run the ball. Seemed that maybe we kind of fixed or mitigated that problem a little bit. Everyone's screaming Eric Flowers, he's public enemy number one for the first month, and you don't really hear his name that much in the last 3-4 losses, which I guess is a good thing. Now everyone's screaming bench Eli, fire McAdoo, you know, there's always a villain to point the finger at. One thing I did wonder is, man, it seems like Eli Manning has missed a lot of wide-open touchdowns. He missed Odell against Philadelphia when we had him matched up on a linebacker. I think he missed Tavares King at least twice. Yesterday, maybe Ingram once, and certainly Sterling Shepard up the seam once. You know, I wonder what your guys' thoughts on that are. Is the age affecting the way he throws the deep ball? Is he not able to gauge the speed and the pace anymore? Is it the pressure? Is it a combination of all those things? And then I guess my other and last question is, Tavares King seems like he always produces. He is kind of the wide receiver version of Orleans Darkwa. He was good in the playoff game last year. He did a phenomenal job getting open yesterday. You know, and it's not like we have an Odell Beckham out there right this second that demands all this coverage. And I just wonder, do you think with the cap hit Brandon Marshall stands to be, even with the dead money, we would still lose if we cut him. Do you think there's a spot to say, you know, Tavares King, maybe you're starting to show us enough that you're that, you know, wide receiver three or maybe even four, and Marshall, you know, we send him packing. Just wondering what your thoughts are on that stuff.
Well, appreciate the phone call, Adam. I certainly think it's a possibility that, you know, King is in the conversation to bring back next season. He was let go earlier this season, but, you know, a lot of that had to do with the fact that they had other areas that they needed to address. And, you know, let's not overlook within the Tavares King conversation, Jeff, he was on the team last year. And he did have that game against the Packers in the playoffs where he caught that long touchdown, but he had been inactive because he wasn't a special teams contributor. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to be, if we're going to use the caller's hypothetical, if you're going to be the number four wide receiver under game-to-game situations, you got to be a special teams contributor. Yeah. So, you know, that's an area that you can't just dismiss when you look at the wide receiver core. So, you know, what they want to do moving forward, I'm sure King is going to be in the conversations. I'm sure they're also going to look at what's out there on the free agent market. They're going to consider the pros and cons of retaining Brandon Marshall. I mean, those are things that they're going to discuss come the offseason. But King has always to me, been a valuable piece. But I think you also need to take into consideration, you know, King's been with a few teams prior. He was on the practice squad, and, you know, he never had that opportunity. The Giants are the first team that gave him that opportunity. But special teams is a big part of being that number three, that number four wide receiver.
I think what will ultimately your decision is going to be made about Tavares King is that he's going to have an opportunity to play the next eight games in a Giants uniform, and it's really going to be an audition for him.
Yeah.
So, you know, the ball's in his court for how he wants to react to playing, and he's going to have to improve on his special teams because, you know, when you look at next year who's coming back, you still got Sterling Shepard and you got
Beckham.
You got Beckham. So there's your two. They're going to look for a three and a four. And if he's one of the guys that can contribute on special teams, I mean, we talk about it all the time, but it does make a difference when it comes down to roster spots. And, you know, you have to be reliable. Orleans Darkwell was a classic example. That guy, he was on the roster because he was one of the best, if not the best, special teams player. And then he all of a sudden started to just get into form with running, and now he's the number one running back on the team. So not that I'm saying that Tavares King would ever be the number one receiver, but you know what I'm saying. He's going to have to play better special teams. The other question with, you know, that we were talking, he asked the question about, you know, what's going on with the whack-a-mole thing. I think that's a great analogy because it's the truth. But, you know, one thing about this offensive line and why we haven't talked much about Ereck Flowers is because there's been other problems besides Ereck
so
Flowers.
So people move on to the other problems,
so, yeah. You know,
we're talking about the defensive breakdown, special teams mishaps, the offensive line, not to say that it's not an issue or not something that warrants being discussed, but there are other more prevalent issues right now. Troubling this team.
And I will tell you that I think if you ask somebody about Ereck Flowers on the staff or the scouting staff, I will tell you that he's improved a little bit this season. I mean, I don't think he's made tremendous jumps, but I think that he is getting better. But it's still not to the point where they want him to be. Trust me. And again, he needs a lot of work along with that whole offensive line. And you know, something that we didn't talk about is the IR move with Weston Richburg yesterday. And now, Adam, you know, I keep saying Adam Jones. I always
Pac-Man.
Say Adam Jones.
I don't know. Pac-Man would have trouble playing center, Jeff, the last time I checked. Brett Jones.
Yeah. But Brett Jones, you know, so he's another guy now that's going to have that starting position the rest of the season. And it will be, you know, listen, Richburg, is going to be a free agent? Are they going to re-sign him now? Or are they going to give the job to Jones? Or are they going to look elsewhere in the draft or what have you? So, you know, this I will tell you, now that this team is where they're at, the season now becomes an evaluation period where the next eight games, you are going to be evaluating the roster of who's going to be back next year and how many of these 53 guys, when you line up after the season's over and you start building your roster for 2018, what percentage of these 53 guys will be back? I would imagine not a lot of them because if this is your team, you're going to start to rebuild some of those positions. You got a big problem at linebacker right now. You really do.
And
you
it
have
doesn't
a
help
lot
that
of injuries at linebacker.
B.J. Goodson has been hurt, yeah.
And, you know, something you have to – and I don't even know if there was a designation with J.T. Thomas or Mark Herzlich. Because if you go on injured reserve at the beginning of the season, you're eligible to come back off after week eight of the season. But I don't know if you can just do that without – if you had to designate them at the beginning of the season. I don't know exactly what the rule is there. But that is a new – you know, just a couple years ago, they brought that back.
Well, now you can bring two guys back from IR.
Two guys,
yeah. That's what the new rule is.
Now, do you know
is?
If they have to – injured reserve right after training camp's over, you're gone. Do you have to say, okay, we are designating you IR
guy?
No,
you don't have to do that very early. But once you know you're bringing a player back, you have to designate that you're bringing them back because then there's that.
The clock stops?
Correct. The clock starts to have X amount of weeks of practicing.
So do you know that if those designations were ever put on J.T. Thomas or
– I don't think the Giants have utilized any of their designations yet.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, part of the philosophy –
And they couldn't do it now. They couldn't go to those guys because you have to wait 8 weeks after you decide – that you designate.
Usually,
them.
I think the timetable is about 6 to 8 weeks before you can even think about bringing back. I'd have to go back and look at when players were put on injured reserve. But remember, Jeff, the philosophy at this point may be, is there a purpose of bringing a veteran back, or should we just give the younger guys an opportunity to get those reps to determine whether or not that's somebody in our future plans? Because I think you brought up a very interesting point. Brett Jones, huge opportunity for him. Second half of the season, the Giants are now going to determine, is Brett Jones somebody that we want to have
whether
as our
he's
future
be a,
center?
Yeah, is he going to be,
is he going to be a backup? Is he going to be a guard?
Right.
Is he going to be our starting center? The clock started right now for him. Tavares King, to the caller's point, the clock has started for Tavares King. Is this somebody that we want to elevate on the depth chart? Do we want to bring him back as that complimentary fourth wide receiver? You know, all of these conversations are going to have to happen over the last 8 games. And it's not just one position. It's multiple positions. Devon Kennard's going to be a free agent. That's another player that you're evaluating. Or do they view him as a guy down on the line? Do they view him as a mobile linebacker? I mean, all of these types of things are going to play out over the next few games.
I'll tell you, one of the guys I really thought played a good game yesterday was Avery Moss. Actually, the last 2 weeks he's played, you know, 2 games, has played
very well.
So, I like it, you know, out of Youngstown State. You don't think this guy's going to be, you know, Youngstown State is not the Alabamas of the world. But the fact is that he actually, there's a prime example of somebody taking advantage of their playing time with two starters or two defensive linemen down with Kerry Wynn and OV. So he's made the best of that opportunity. And that's what these guys are going to have to do right now. They have to understand that. And if I'm them and I have the opportunity, I'm over-preparing. I am going, I'm going to know my assignments. I'm going to know my game plan. I'm going to do everything I can because, you know, this is not preseason. This is an evaluation process that's even better because you are against the other. This is the real season.
Yeah, it's real game and situation. So it's not preseason.
It's hard to evaluate it, that you can't compare the two. This is real, you know, real stuff. And so this is a great time for an organization to be able to evaluate their players when this is a regular season game opposed to a preseason game.
Because you're going up against starting caliber corners and starting caliber defenders.
Oh, yeah. And that's why when we turn the conversation towards the quarterbacking position, it makes more sense to have a guy like Davis Webb in a regular season game against, you know, most of the teams in a blowout. They're not taking all of their starters out. They're going to take a select few. So he's still going to get – you know, the sample size of who he's going up against is still quality football players.
And that gives you a better idea of how a player can produce as opposed to putting him in the third preseason game and thinking that he is going to duplicate what he does against third and fourth stringers or guys that are going to be on the street in a few days. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Lance Beto, Jeff Eagles with you here, Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, 201-939-4513. Marco is in Connecticut. Marco, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Jeff.
Hi, Marco.
All right, Marco. What do you got?
I'm doing okay.
Good.
I think we're going to be talking a lot throughout this offseason, and I'm thankful for you guys because I think we're going to be talking about a lot of changes coming up. And when the smoke clears, Lance Neto might be the most tenured Giant standing around.
Well, I don't know about that, but.
Well, something's got to change, right? I mean, listen, you can't continue to put the same product on the field and expect, better results. You got to fix things here. And as an organization, you can't accept losing because that's what this is all about. It's all about winning. It's about winning championships. And somehow you got to put things together and make the right choices.
I agree. A couple things here, specifically about McAdoo. But you mentioned Davis Webb yesterday. Davis Webb being inactive, Jeff, about the injuries on the team. And where that might be true, but I was thinking about this going into the game yesterday. People have been saying, you know, is Webb going to play, especially over the last 2 weeks? Now, mathematically, the Giants are not eliminated. But I think, just me personally, Webb being inactive had more to do with if he was active before the game. That's Ben McAdoo in a lot of ways admitting to some things that he just doesn't want to admit to. For starters, Davis Webb was brought in to the Giants organization to be a developmental quarterback, and we're gonna hopefully be playing this guy in 2 years. Ideally, that's what they would love.
Yeah.
They would love to emulate something that, like, New England's doing, the Packers are doing.
With Aaron Rodgers,
Absolutely, and I give Ben McAdoo a lot of credit for that. But where I don't is that, I get it. I mean, it's his job. He's the head coach. He's hanging on by a thread here. And so yesterday, there's a lot of people, media included, really getting the fans riled up on Twitter, talking about, oh, hey, if you're wondering where Davis Webb is, he's inactive today, which obviously he's inactive now. He's not going to be inactive going forward, but yesterday he was inactive because if they beat the Rams and they're 2-6, then you go to San Francisco and we'll see what happens. But that's not my point. My point is, I called you guys the Detroit game. I went to the game in New York, and that was just a debacle. And I said to you, Jeff, and I think you agreed with me, that I think McAdoo would really afford, from being a lot like Coughlin was in 07, where sometimes you got to make a change, whether it's subtle, whether it's real out loudly spoken. But the people need to see you changing. And I feel for the guy a little bit because he's a young head coach, but the media is on him like piranhas, and he does not do anything to help himself. I listen to everything he says every day. And I get a lot of it. Like, he came out yesterday. He explained where the Giants went wrong. Something on special teams, something on defense, something on offense, turnovers. Okay, I'll take your question. And then one of the questions was, why do you think it went so bad today? Well, he just got done saying that. So obviously he's mad, and he gives, like, a terrible answer, and they eat him up on that because they think he's stubborn. He doesn't give a really good, clear answer. And people are just left to spin this out of control, and that's exactly what's happened.
Marco, and I'll let you continue. I mean, they've done that to a lot of New York coaches, whether it be in football, basketball, baseball. I mean, this is the New York market. So whatever you say or do, the narrative is going to be carried out by whatever that writer or whatever that reporter wants to do. So, I mean, I don't know. I get your point about people changing, but I just don't know if a soundbite at a press conference is going to change the performance of a team, if that's what you're alluding to based on what I'm reading into.
Yes or no, we could go on for days about this, but listen, I've heard Coach Spagnuolo, the defense is playing awful. You got to hear, when Spag meets with the media on Thursday or Friday, you would think they're sitting down and having coffee together. They love this guy, and he's had a terrible year. Terrible. It is the way you are delivering the message as well. I mean, but Coach McAdoo's got a different seat than Spagnuolo, but I'm listening to him, and a lot of times I'm like, oh, Ben, come on, just give me something here, man. And I actually thought, you don't have to go on WFAN once a week with your show that you do once a week like Eli Manning does or something. If that's not your thing, it might not be your thing. Coughlin didn't like doing it either. But you got to have someone, something that's getting a clear message from you. Here's what I like about McAdoo. I thought last year, he did a lot with the new program that's been instituted with injury. Like, I think injuries has come down. Now, this year, but it is what it is. But last year, that was a big change. And really, remember, at the end of Coughlin, Eli's interception numbers, especially actually going back to Gilbride, Eli's interceptions were way up. McAdoo came in. I think he's got a nice outlook on what he wants from the offense. This is not the type of offense that I think, especially with the quarterback, that would really highlight what he's doing. I don't know. I just think we have patient ownership. John Mara said a couple of years ago that he wanted to fire the whole team after the Jacksonville loss.
Yep.
Well, I'm grateful that we have an owner that doesn't do that. You know, if you want to root for the Cleveland Browns, they'll fire their owner. They'll fire their coach every year. So I think John Mara is going to take a hard look at this, but the body blows keep coming. At week after week after week, that I'm actually at the point where I don't know who's going to make it through the rest of the season. I don't know how it got that. I'm jumping around a little bit, but specifically the defense, because I think that's where they spent a lot of money 2 years ago. And last year you were like, look, we spent money. It equaled a great, great defense that lined up last year. We have a good defense. Let's go build up that offense. Well, now the defense has totally fallen apart. Suspensions, guys playing bad, Eli Apple, Landon Collins. So what specifically has gone wrong there? Because I think that's really something that you got to pay a lot of attention to, because there's a lot of money on that defensive side.
Well,
I appreciate the phone call, Mark.
I can flat out tell you that, coaches coach and players play. And, you know, the coaches, I can pretty much tell you that, you know, their preparation every week is the same. They do, they're very, very routined. They have a schedule that they stick to. They're always breaking down the next game a week before. And so they give the team a game plan, and this is how we're going to attack and try to win this game. Now, are those always flawless? No, I mean, there are game plans that are put together that some of them aren't good ones, but they, you know, they're presented to the players to learn, because the players have to learn from their coaches that do the studying and put the game plan together. Now, it's up to the players to go and study that and give feedback to the coaches. You know, I'm looking at this stuff. It doesn't seem right to me, or this or that. And not only that, but there's got to be more time spent on preparation, especially if the way that you're playing. And if I'm a player and I'm looking on this defense, I'm on the defense and I'm looking the way we're playing, I can guarantee you that I'm going to try to fix it. And that's whether it's more film time, it's on the field more, whatever it is I got to do, we're going to do it. But to me, back to my original point, is the coaches coach and the players play. The players have to play better. I'm sorry. Okay, there's a lot of stuff going on this field that is not good. Okay, and that is strictly effort. That is strictly guys not knowing where they're supposed to be. And that, to me, is preparation. And I said it at the beginning of the show, I can't speak to it because I'm not in the building. I'm not in the meetings. I'm not in the locker room. I don't know where the preparation is or isn't. But I can tell you that what I'm seeing on the field, to me, is a lack of it. And I can just see that. And somebody might call me out on it. I don't really care. But until you can show me that you're playing better and the preparation is better, then that's where I'm going to go with it. Because, you know, the key to success is preparation. Tom Coughlin used to say it all the time. And I've made this point before to some people about, they asked me about the Giants and this and that. I would promise you that if you looked at what guys were doing at the beginning of the season, before the season even started, and what the guys are doing now in week 8 or week 9, I bet you there's a difference. I bet you there's a difference in which the guys are, how much time they're spending in the weight room, how much time they're spending in the meeting rooms, what they're doing off the field. And what happens, I've been on losing teams before, you lose interest. You're still getting paid, which is a beautiful thing. It may not be for long, but you're still getting that money. Okay, and what happens is you start getting lazy, and you start taking the easy way out and this, when that's not what football's all about. And the guys that play in the league the longest understand that. And I'm one of them. I was always afraid to lose my job, Lance.
That fear helped drive you.
Absolutely. And towards the end of my career, you know, I was making a lot of money. I didn't want that to stop. So I was like, you know what? Even though I'm older, I got to find ways to get better every single day. And because I don't want to lose my job. Now, number one, I didn't want to stop getting paid. Number two, it's the embarrassment of getting fired. And number three, I love the game so much, I'm going to keep playing it. That's the fire that you need in 53 guys right there.
Well, I think you bring up a very valid point. Connected to that in terms of the message, and this relates to the last call by Marco, when you are in the locker room, to me, I would think it matters more, Jeff, what the coach is telling the players as opposed to what the coach is telling the media.
Oh, there's
How
no question.
How do you look at that? Because I go back to the point that I understand fans, they want the coach to be more open. But you know what? I mean, Bill Belichick, and I'm not comparing Ben McAdoo and Bill Belichick, but Bill Belichick gives you absolutely nothing. If you watch his press conference, he tells you nothing. You know, he looks like a grumpy man who just doesn't want to be there, right? So I can understand they're looking at the way McAdoo talks to the media. He's short. He gets right to the point. He doesn't give you much. I don't disagree with that assessment. But where I disagree is what he tells the media, I don't think is an indication of the conversations that are occurring in the locker room.
Yeah, and I don't know because I'm not there.
Of course, but even from your experience with other coaches, I mean, Coughlin at the beginning of his career wasn't a guy that gave a dissertation to everybody.
No, but what happens here in this media, especially for a guy that's never been a head coach before, you learn through the process. You kind of understand how the media works. Now, if Ben McAdoo was a coach in Cincinnati, okay, this would not be
an issue. A little different, the environment.
It was totally different, okay? But there are certain coaches that will – I'll give you a prime example. He's been a coach in the NFL before, is Nick Saban. Nick Saban will use the media to get to his players. He uses that tool. I do it all the time. I say something to the media because I know these kids are listening and watching and things, then they're going to get that message. Ben McAdoo's message usually is sometimes sent through the media. I remember the first couple weeks of the season when he had mentioned about Eli Manning. Quarterback's got to play better. Eli's got to play better. That's kind of a message he's trying to send through a guy that knew that he could do it because Eli could handle it. Okay, if you're going to put that message through a young guy that's a first-year player, probably not going to happen, but
may not
react to it. But so, you know, and different coaches they motivate in different ways. I mean, Ben McAdoo is a big guy. You know, he uses film clips. He uses all kinds of cliches, things like that. That's the way he tries to motivate and get his point across to the players. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But every coach is different like that. Like you said, they're all different when it comes to that.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Bam Bam's in Rockefeller.
Bam Bam.
Bam Bam. What's happening?
Hey guys, long time no calling.
All right.
I've been listening every day, though, so I appreciate
you tuning in. So what do you got for us?
Coming our way. You know, I just going back to one of the other callers that just called in about, you know, comparing, like, with the Browns and changing their coaches every year. And I agree that that's not a good strategy. But in this particular case, what the Giants have kind of done since 2012 is a lot of half measures. And I think a lot of it was, as Eli's getting older, they kind of wanted to squeeze one last Super Bowl run in them. First, it was forcing Coughlin to fire Gilbride. I know they said he retired, but he got fired. Then they fire Coughlin, they keep the GM, and they had kind of like a half-assed coaching search. Everyone knew McAdoo was going to get the job. They need to kind of start over from the entire scratch. They need a new set of eyes on things. Since 2011, really, since that Super Bowl, the team has stunk. I mean, last year was really an outlier. They had a really good year. They won a lot of close games against a weak schedule. And as this season's kind of unfolding and you're seeing, you know, guys not coming back on time from a bye week, you've got guys walking off the field, guys leaving practices, the whole thing, it is just a mess from top to bottom. And somebody has to pay the price for it, and it can't be a situation where the GM goes, and then the new GM is forced to keep the coach. They need to kind of start entirely over and move on from there. I'm going to say one more thing, and it's really kind of a question for Jeff. Because, you know, you're a player, you could probably answer this better. But I understand what he says to the team versus the media is two different things. But McAdoo comes off as a buffoon when it comes to the media, particularly yesterday with his famous halftime speech answer where he just said, and then just moved on. I'm just curious, Jeff, if the players keep an eye on those kind of things and what they might think about it. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
All right, Babbitt. Appreciate the call.
Well, I think that, you know, if you were in that locker room at halftime, and this is, I'm just guessing because I wasn't, but I can promise you that they're what he said was not what he said in the locker room. And I think that the was more from the tone of, I really can't say what I said in the locker room, because if I did, there would be bleeping going all over the place.
Yeah.
And so, and I think it was kind of, maybe he felt that it was kind of an unfair question, like, you know, why do I need to tell you what I told the team in the locker room, kind of that thing. So I think that's kind of where I take that from. But it was, when you look at it, you're like, wow.
Okay. Well, it made for great social media material.
Totally.
Let's
did.
Face it, because you take that clip and then you read the headline. I get it. And I understand everybody gets a chuckle out of it. I would agree with you, Jeff. I think it's a guy that's frustrated. He's irritated. You know, he basically is going to give the same answer to all of the questions. You know, we had special teams breakdown. We had offensive breakdowns. We had defensive breakdowns. I mean, it was almost like a response. What do you think I told the guys at halftime?
That's how I
sort of interpreted it.
It was more like, do you really want me to tell you what I said? Because but you're right. It made it was good for social media, and everybody liked it. But, you know, it's the coaches, they walk a fine line, because, you know, the locker room is a very confident place. You know, what I mean by that is it's not confident. Well, it can be. It doesn't seem like it's a very confident place. It's a very confidential place. So there's a lot of things that are said in the locker room, and a lot of things that are done there that don't need to be out in the media, don't need to leave the locker room. And you kind of hope, you wish that more of that stayed in the locker room. Because I remember Jonathan Casillas in his interview the other day had mentioned about, somebody had asked him about things that happen and why the Giants stuff, you hear so much about it. It's just the way it is these days. You know, in New England, you never heard about the things because they never got outside the locker room. Guys were tight-knitted. They shut their mouths. They zipped it, and nothing kind of, you know, got it. I can tell you that there were so many times when I was in the locker room when Plaxico Burress was here. I mean, I can't tell you how many times he came coming into the locker room after our meetings were already started and over. But nobody heard about those because he just kind of kept it in-house. He just like, why are we going to mention this to cause a distraction? There's enough distractions on this team already, and unfortunately Ben has had to deal with them. And it's a very tough situation that he's put in. I think a lot of people are, you know, they're sitting there scratching their head like, how do you suspend this guy when you don't suspend this guy? And maybe some of the players are thinking the same thing. What? I don't know. But and again, when you're 1-7, it's so easy to attack these things. Okay, if we're 7-1, these are trivial. None of this matters because they're winning. they're not winning right now, so we just pile on. Everybody
well, and
piles
that
on.
That's what's happening with every losing team across sports.
No question.
It's easy to turn to these narratives and storylines because, you know, they're easy to poke fun at.
And it's what we do. It's why we have a show. It's why we talk about sports. That's just the way in 2017 it works. You know, in 2000 and even there wasn't all the social media and there was a lot of things that got kept in house. So not to say that any of this never happened back then, it all did. Just nobody ever found out about it because they didn't have
no
a resource.
Yeah,
of it.
The outlets weren't out there. I think that's a great point. I mean, listen, if Ben McAdoo coached in the 80s, you know, he wouldn't have to worry about social media.
No.
They wouldn't have the highlight shows. You'd either hear it on the radio or see it on the TV in terms of the late night news, and that would be the end of it.
And the thing about it is, I for as many years as I played in three decades. So the 80s were different than the 90s.
You've seen the technology.
The 90s were different than the 2000s. And I will tell you, there was so much stuff that went on that nobody ever knew about. I mean, guys sneaking out of hotels, you know, before now they have closed circuit cameras. So the idiots that sneak out now, they're like, well, what are you, stupid? There's cameras there.
Well, and people have phones, too, out on the street. So good luck sneaking out and not getting caught.
I remember in training camp back in the early 90s, we would go out after curfew. We would put a rock in the fire escape door. Okay.
So that you
when we
back.
Went out, and so when we came back in, the door was open, and we just went up to bed, and you know, but the thing about it is, we could go to those bars because there was no phones. There was look, there's Lance Meadow out at 2 o'clock in the morning with Jeff Eagles at the bar. click.
Yeah,
busted.
And then it's on social media in 2 seconds.
Yeah. So you know, now it's just you got to watch what you do, and some people just they don't watch what they do, or they don't watch what they say, and bam, there it all is.
Let's head back to the phone lines, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. We got Jay in Washington, D.C. Jay, what's happening?
Hey, Jeff. Hey, Lance. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thanks for
making
it.
How you doing today, Jay? I guess all those Redskins fans are pretty happy down there in D.C. today, huh?
And giving me every bit of the blue.
Oh, I can bet. That's why I said that. Yeah, I can imagine. Well, hang tough, buddy. Hang tough.
You know, yesterday, I've been a Giants fan for a very long time, obviously. Being a Giants fan, you know, you see the ups and downs of the season. Yesterday was very Murphy's Law, I would like to say. You know, everything that can go wrong went wrong. And third and 33, to have a screen pass go for a touchdown, I had a couple choice words that I used, and my wife came and asked me what happened. I had the same explanation that McAdoo had for the halftime. I couldn't say what I really wanted to say, but just a quick point that I wanted to make. You know, the defense just has been underperforming, and this has been going on pretty much since 2015, in my opinion. You know, I'm looking at this year alone as far as team opponent plays per game, meaning how many plays opponents get on our defense. We're ranked last in the league. You know, we're 67 plays a game, and it's just unacceptable. I just feel like this team is underachieving, underperforming, regardless of the injuries. And just to the point of injuries really quickly, everybody says, okay, the injuries don't play a factor, but there's a reason why you have a depth chart. You know, you have 1, 2, 3, and 4, and they're put in that specific place for a reason. So, you know, I just wanted to get you guys' output as far as what can we do just for the remaining of the season. Do we continue to play our starters and just hope for the best, and or do we look towards the future and see what we have then? And last thing, Saquon Barkley, 2018. Thanks, guys.
Hi, Jay.
Call.
Referring to the Penn State running back, appreciate the phone call. I don't think we're in the mode of speculating about the draft just now, even though I know some people's mindsets. In terms of playing time, well, first I wanted to piggyback off of his point about total plays that the opposing teams are running is very high for what the Giants are seeing. And to me, there's a simplistic answer. You can't get off the field on third down. You don't have a great deal of takeaways to also limit the amount of plays, and a lot of these teams are putting together lengthy drives, and they have been winning time of possession. But with all of that being said, and I was having this conversation with somebody on Twitter recently, Jeff, they won time of possession against the Bucks. They also were about even with the Chargers and still wound up losing those games. So to say that the only reason why the Giants are losing games this season is because the defense is tiring and they're getting worn down is overlooking the special teams issues, which has nothing to do with total plays.
Sure.
And also the offensive turnovers. For example, when you give the Rams the ball on the Giants 18, what did it take? It took the Rams like three or four plays to get into the end zone. You're going to tell me that that's tiring down the defense?
No.
It's the fact that you're putting the defense in a situation where all of a sudden the amount of space that they have to work with is limited. Because when you're bunched in the red zone,
yeah,
there's only certain things that you could do in terms of your alignment. So I think it's too simplistic to say the reason why the Giants are 1-7 is because the defense is tiring.
And plus, these teams are taking wins, they're taking leads into the fourth quarter with a running game and being able to eat up the time of possession and being able to run plays and convert third downs to sustain drive. So, you know, they're piling on probably 10, 12 extra plays in a fourth quarter from going averaging 67 plays that maybe they should, you know, be down in the maybe low 60s or 59, something like that. I mean, typically, I think there's 70 plays in a game is really the number that you
on
look
average.
At. So I wouldn't put too much stock in that type of statistic, but I think third down is a bigger statistic when you talk about the Giants' defense and what these teams do. The Rams coming into this game were close to 50% on third down.
Number one.
And they hit the nail on the head yesterday. They were exactly 50%. By the way, the Giants were pretty good on 50%. They were 50% yesterday, too.
Yeah, they were 6 of 12.
Problem is, and it's very easy. The game of football, when you look at it and you dissect it, it comes down to one thing. It's turnovers. It's the number one stat in football. So you look at it, three turnovers, okay? Every single turnover was points converted by the other team. There you go. And then the game gets out of hand and it's over.
No, because it changes field position.
And
no
question.
And that's what you can't afford to do. I'm looking at the numbers from yesterday. Believe it or not, the Giants actually ran more plays than the Rams yesterday. 66 to 61. Now, I could tell you why. Sammy Watkins, one play, 67
Boom.
Yards.
Yeah.
That's the entire drive.
Sure.
Robert Woods, even though they had run a few plays prior to
down.
That, it was a third and 33. He ran 52 yards. So I go back to this, Jeff. When people analyze time of possession, they analyze the lopsidedness of total plays. It becomes irrelevant, those factors, if you give up explosive plays.
Yeah.
Because that means that if it takes the opposition two plays to score two touchdowns, who cares what the time of possession is? Who cares how many plays you're at?
It's the points.
You're trailing 14-0, right?
The points, yeah.
So, it's a valuable statistic, don't get me wrong, but in a game like yesterday, time of possession and total plays meant nothing because the Rams, in the blink of an eye, were scoring like that. So it's not a stat that I think had a lot of substance pertaining to yesterday's game.
I think time of possession, when you're in a close game, it can matter. You know, that's when you want to.
If it's a highly contested battle.
But when,
yes.
When it's a game like yesterday, you don't even look at that statistic. You look at the turnovers, and that'll tell the tale of the tape. And you look at, listen. For everybody who's not a great man of words, McAdoo came out at his beginning of this press conference and basically told you how the game went, and that was pretty much it. That's all you had to know, and nothing else said. Oh, there's a lot of questions asked, this and this, but the bottom line is that they had horrible special teams play, a block kick and a block punt and a missed field goal, three turnovers on offense, and a defense that couldn't cover anybody. There you go. How are you going to win a game?
There are teams that have trouble winning games when they break down on one facet, let alone three.
Well, typically, and I've said this many times before, and it's the truth, in my opinion, if you have the three phases of the game, you win two of them each week, you win the game. You can let one of them out of there. Your defense lets you down, but your offense and your special teams make up for it, you'll win the game and vice versa and around there. But when you lose, if you only win one of the three, your chances are very slim to win. If you lose three of the three, you're done. Put a fork in you, you're finished. And that's what's happened. And really, when you look at the season as a whole, if we went down and broke down the first eight games of the season under this formula and tried to figure it out, I think the Denver game, you probably won all three phases of the game. You won the game going away. I mean, you really played well that game. Yeah,
you won time of possession.
Rushing.
You ran the football. You kept them out of the field on third down.
You won all three. You won special teams, offense, defense. You won those areas of the game. But when you go to look at all these games and you say, which components did we win? Very rarely are you winning two of the three this year and you still have lost the game.
I think that sums it up beautifully. And that's more of a reason why it takes as near to an ideal performance for this team to win games this season. Because in the Denver game, which there were issues, but they got check marks in all of those categories, Jeff, that you just mentioned.
Right.
In all of these other games, they lost on third down. They lost time of possession. They lost the turnover battle.
Yeah.
There was some combination of a few factors. Correct.
Right.
Explosive plays.
And the Rams put up some big plays. I mean, they're a big play offense. And going into it, you knew they were going to get their share of them, and they certainly did yesterday.
They had five pass plays of 35 or more yards, two of which that led to touchdowns.
Well, they scored in 9 of their 12 possessions.
I mean, If you're Sean McVay, you're saying, guys, I think we're having a good success rate today.
I like this game
plan.
I'm
going
to put it in my folder and say, if I need 51, this is the folder I got to go to.
Correct. Exactly. Let's head back to the phone lines. Mike is in North Bergen. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, Mike.
Hey, what's going on, guys? First and foremost, Jeff, just want to say thanks for playing some prideful Giants football.
Thank you.
Unlike these other guys, I don't know what's going on. I mean, listen, last week, Reese said that the coach, he's smart. I guess he's got the brains, but he does not have the heart, guys. And the way that the players are playing right now, it's a reflection off the head coach because they got no heart either. What they put out yesterday, I don't even know. I don't even think I'm allowed to put it in words, fellas, because forget about it. You guys will just hang up on me right now.
Well, we try to keep it PG-13, so we appreciate that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, we're all adults here, but these players, they're not playing like adults. They're not playing like professionals. They're playing like a bunch of lousy stands. We definitely need change, wholesale changes. I'm still going to defend my guy, though. I'm still going to defend number 10. Yeah, he's had a couple missed throws here and there, but that's going to happen. You could be the greatest quarterback, and you're going to have an off day. You know what I'm saying? He's got enough in the tank, though, that he could definitely play some prideful Giant football. But, we need some changes, guys. What do you think?
Well, definitely need changes. I mean, it's up for discussion of where you start, basically. And I always start with the players. I really do, because I think that, those are the guys you're watching on Sunday. And when the players aren't playing well, you first go to them and you break down what is it the players are doing. And if the players are doing their job and they're not getting a game plan and the plays and the schemes are way off, then you go to the coaches and then you look at a personnel. And this is a big, bag of things you look at. And the first thing you have to do is figure out, why are we losing these games? I mean, years ago, when Tom was here, we always understood how we were going to be able to win the game against our opponent. And number one was always, we're going to win the turnover battle. And that's the first way we're going to win the game. Okay, if you look at the statistics, it will tell you that if you win the turnover battle, especially on the road, you're going to win X amount of percentage of time. And I'll give you a quick story. Every Friday in Tom Coughlin, we would come in there, and it was Stats Friday, and it was 20 minutes of statistics on Fridays. And you're sitting on the sidelines in games thinking to yourself, okay, we've got 3 turnovers in the first half.
And then resorting back to
Friday's conversation. And I'm looking at the slide on the Saturday or the Friday meetings going, we're not going to win this game according to the slides. We're on the road.
The math,
We're -3 on turnovers right now. And so, things like that. But you get what I'm saying. You really do. There's got to be some, something's got to – when you say change, is it philosophy? Is it coaches? Is it players? Is it preparation? Whatever it is, you got to find out something quickly and build upon it.
Well, and that's why the evaluation process in the second half of the season is going to determine what they choose to do in the offseason. But, here's the thing, and I understand because of the math and the record right now, a lot of people want to talk about what's going to happen in January and February, but – at this point, heading into the Niners game on Sunday, nothing drastically is going to happen. I mean, let's be realistic here. That's not how this organization operates. I know a lot of people on Twitter, I'm reading the tweets, and on the phones, were throwing out the Cleveland Browns, who, it's like a merry-go-round. Every single year, it's new players, it's new front office members, it's new coaches, and there's a reason why that organization, Jeff, has failed to make the playoffs and has had losing records consistently.
Yeah.
That's always usually a reflection coming down to the team.
I mean, this was a playoff team last year, so you can't kind of go with that philosophy and you would change everything around and things are going to get better. The Browns, they can't get out of their own shadow. I mean, that to me is a complete – you got baseball guys over there trying to run a football team. That doesn't make sense to me.
Buffalo Bills is another organization that has had trouble because of inconsistency. You alluding to Paul DePodesta his Mets ties and now trying to run the Cleveland Browns. But I'm using those organizations as examples of when you constantly make changes, and some of those teams also had change in ownership too, which you can't overlook. It tends to lead to inconsistency on the field because every few years you're saying, okay, we're going to go in this direction. And then 2 years later, we're going to go in this direction. There's got to be a point where you say, this is the decision we made. We've got to stick it out. We've got to let it play out a little. Now, those are going to be decisions that the front office is going to have to make in the offseason.
Unfortunately, this year, this decision has been made early for them. They basically have been – now that the narrative, if you will, like you always say, is that the narrative of the story is that we've got to make changes now. We got to start doing something different. So we weren't thinking about this 8 weeks ago. We're talking about a team that was supposed to go win the division and go to the Super Bowl. Now we're figuring out – we're evaluating our roster for next year.
The conversation completely changed.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, from an X's and O's standpoint, that conversation was had during the bye week. You know, Ben McAdoo and company were thinking about, all right, do we change some offensive personnel? Do we change what we're doing? You know, those were things from a schematic standpoint. Now, when you're talking about an organizational philosophy, Jeff, yeah, a few months ago, it was they were hoping to build off the playoff appearance. Now it's, okay, are we going to continue to go in this direction? Are we going to make tweaks here? Are we going to make tweaks there? Yeah, the whole philosophy has to change.
And I was trying to go back and figure out, you know, we heard from Ben McAdoo there would be subtle changes and, you know, things like that. So what did we see yesterday in subtle changes? I saw a little bit more 21 personnel. Okay, that's what I did see. And that's two tight ends, one back. I saw Red Ellison a little bit, if you want to call it, a little bit involved in the passing game. I mean, he did a catch one pass. Okay, so that is more than what he's been doing anyway. Because
games,
I remember in the preseason, we were like,
did,
oh, my God,
like
Red Ellison is catching a
three
ball.
Three straight catches.
Oh, my God,
point.
This is going to be the new Red Ellison, you know. You know, so offensively, I thought that they committed to the run and they did it well. I mean, the Giants actually ran the football pretty decently yesterday. And Orleans Darkwood continues to be a guy that you say, you know what, this guy, you know, Paul Perkins was active yesterday. Okay. Paul Perkins, I didn't see Paul Perkins play yesterday. Did he?
I don't remember him. He certainly didn't get a carry. I can't
he
remember.
He might have played some special teams.
I can't remember him, though, lining up in the backfield on any of the plays. Yeah, he may have been out there on special teams. But you know what? I can look up the snaps, actually,
but
and tell you
what. But my point is that, you know, the run game has continually gotten better. If you want to take some positives out of just a dismal season, the running game is getting better, okay? And I think that Sterling Shepard being healthy yesterday, if Eli was on the mark a little bit better, you saw that had kind of helped. Evan Engram has been just an amazing, amazing player this season. I mean, he's kept his nose to the grindstone. You can tell why the Giants drafted him in the first round. They like he's everything that he was advertised coming out of the draft. That's for sure. That is for sure.
He's been a huge focal point to the offense. He's been consistent. I think they want to see more production out of the receiving core, which we got a little bit.
Yeah,
and we saw that a little bit yesterday. Correct.
Shepard caught some
Shepard's
balls.
Shepard's return.
But
helped.
I will tell you, there was eight drops in this game yesterday. Eight drops by those wide receivers. Okay, so we can get on Eli all you want, but the fact of the matter is that if the statistic says drop, that means that the ball was thrown from the quarterback to the receiver and somehow touched their hands. So you know you can't have the drops out of the receiving position either.
21 snaps on special teams.
There you go,
for Paul Perkins.
So it was all 21. On special teams.
So there you go. All right, let's hear the final word on the phone lines. We got Dan in Delaware. Dan, what's happening?
Hi, Danny.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good, Dan. What's going on?
I do agree with you about Evan Engram. I mean, he has basically been one of the lone bright spots on this team this entire year. You know, if we were winning and it wasn't for Kareem Hunt, he would probably be the offensive rookie of the year, in my opinion.
Be pretty darn close. I agree with you. Yeah.
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 But, you know, a lot of the stuff, and this isn't specific to you guys, but a lot, like, you know, other hosts and stuff, you know, and you brought up the Browns earlier. I mean, to hear things like, well, in the 70s it was worse, or, hey, you know, look at the Browns, or this, or I mean, we're the New York Giants. We have higher standards, and no one should have to apologize for that. So we have higher demands as a fan base. I don't know what the Browns PSLs are. I don't know if the Browns have PSLs. So I don't know. The other teams don't matter to me. This is unacceptable for a team like the New York Giants. That's a cornerstone franchise.
I agree with you there.
In this league.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I don't like hearing things. And I'm not, again, it's not about you guys, but these are just things that other people have said. You know, oh,
well,
it could be worse. In the 70s it was worse. Or you could be the Browns. Thank God you're not the Browns. That's irrelevant to me. You know, another caller earlier in the show brought up that Jacksonville Jaguars game. I do agree with him. I mean, this San Francisco 49ers game has the potential to be that game where –
just don't say that.
That's a long flight home if you take an L to an 0-9 team. That game right there could determine the number 1, 2, or 3 overall pick in the draft, to be honest with you. But, you know, I want to just talk about McAdoo real quick. I mean, I know we're not a team that makes rash decisions and fires a guy halfway through the season. I know that's not our M.O., But doing it one time or making an exception or having an exceptional situation, it doesn't completely change the history or the outlook or the way the Giants operate. And the only reason I say this about McAdoo is, you know, he suspends Jenkins or he suspends DRC, and then you talked earlier in the show about how we don't, you know, a lot of these things stay in-house, or you would never hear about these things. Well, you can't keep a suspension in-house.
No.
And it would not have had to have come to a suspension if they would do other things in-house. Or if, you know, if he sat the first series or the first quarter, and then after the game he'd have to explain, I understand that. But the reason why he's suspending these guys, is, my opinion, is because it's him losing control of this team, and it's an overcorrection to previous mistakes that he's made. You know, okay. When you have a guy like Evan Engram, we're 0-1. We're basically going 0-2 in that Lions game, and we're not winning the game, and he catches his first touchdown pass, and he grabs his crotch. Or we're 0-2 in Philly in a must-win game, and Odell Beckham pees on, you know, pretends to pee on the field. When you don't nip these things in the bud early, and you lay the law down with these guys, they're and then you start losing on top of it to compound it. These guys are millionaires, so they don't like they're gonna lose the team. And I understand what you said, Jeff. You're the player. You've been in the locker room. You've been on losing teams. You got to have some kind of pride in your work. You get paid very well. You got to show up. But at the same time, it's also relative. I mean, we've all had jobs where we report into somebody. When you have bad leadership, you don't give that extra effort. Or when you do have good leadership, you do give that little extra push. So it's relative to what their job is compared to everyone else's job. And I say this only because I look at a team like the Jacksonville Jaguars. They have not been relevant in years. And they're finally relevant. And they finally have something going for them. And I remember the very first week of the season, their number, I think he was drafted third overall, Fowler. He got into some incident in the offseason in his like apartment complex. And they benched him. He didn't like play in that first game. And then I look at this past weekend, their best offensive player, their
Leonard
best
Fournette.
Offensive player, their yeah. number four overall pick, doesn't play in the game because he missed a team photo or something. Yeah. I would be willing to bet my life that something like that will never, ever happen again to that guy. It will never happen again. And that's Tom Coughlin going in there, and that's Doug Marrone doing that. They're setting the tone for this team. They're changing the culture from losing to winning. And they had everything to gain by winning that game. They're in the playoff hunt. They can win their division. And they benched their best player. We're 1-7, and we've done everything wrong from Jump Street this year. So now you bench, you know, Jenkins. It doesn't do anything. You got these are things you got to nip in the bud. And this is why it goes to McAdoo specifically. And you go into this game against San Francisco and you lose to an 0-9 team potentially, in my opinion, and I know it's not the Giants' way, you got to cut this guy loose and just promote somebody from within, Spags or somebody like that. Let him finish the season out. It lets you get a chance to interview guys early. It lets you a chance to gauge the market. It lets you have a chance to do this because I don't know how to put it into words, but this guy, in my view, we will never win with this guy. And I know we won 11 games last year, but someone mentioned it earlier. We played not a great schedule. We won a lot of close games. We had a lot of guys trying to justify their big contracts last year that got paid a lot of money. You had a guy like JPP who was playing for a big contract last year. To me, it was an outlier of a season and not an indication of what we really are. I think we're closer. I won't say we're closer to a 1-7 team, but we're closer to the 6-10, 7-9.
Well, we've talked about this a lot, Dan, and appreciate the phone call that they won a lot of close games last year, and you can't dismiss that. You can't overlook that because those games could have easily went the opposite way, and then we're talking about maybe a 6-10 team instead of an 11-5 team. That's why I say record alone doesn't tell the whole story of how a season goes. As far as just a quick commentary on, you know, if players are troublesome in the views of individuals that you should just let them go. I think that's easy to say, Jeff, but you can't dismiss the salary cap. There's financial implications
yes,
connected
a lot
to
of
players.
Different things
that
go
so
into it.
While it's easy to say, sure, you know, get rid of a guy like Janoris Jenkins, I'm using that as a hypothetical. You don't just get rid of a player and then sure he's off the books, he's gone, and then we get the money back. There's dead money involved, there's financial implications. That's why there's a lot of organizations that don't just cut bait with players, even though maybe there are some issues.
It's also why you have to be very careful when you sign them.
Of course. Like anything else, you got to do your research, you got to do your homework. But also sometimes, you know, you could do your homework, you could talk to guys, just like you do in the draft,
yeah.
And then things completely catch you off guard.
Yeah.
Because you just don't know until you throw a player in that situation.
Yeah, and you hope you never get to that situation where it's gotten so bad that all of a sudden now, and we're not talking about any particular player on this team.
Just big
picture.
It's
just a matter of big picture that all of a sudden now you're like, oh my God, we got to cut this guy because he's doing nothing for us and da-da-da, but you know what, guess what? Now we got dead money on the cap, and there's a lot of different things that go into it.
With that being said, appreciate everybody for tuning in. Big Blue Kickoff Live up and running tomorrow, noon Eastern. We'll continue to break down this game as well as look ahead to the San Francisco 49ers. For Jeff Eagles, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.